like the medieval help desk. Have you seen the medieval help desk by any chance?
I think that's, Doc, I think that's the medieval help desk.
The medieval, whatever. Yeah.
All right. Why don't we do a round robin of who's here, and then I have two different agenda, and I'll go through those, and we can go past that. I'll start. This is Dean Landsman.
Okay.
Joe Andrew.
Doc Searles.
Kevin Barron.
Matt Terenzi. Excuse me.
Who's the last one there?
Matt Terenzio is here.
Okay, great.
Ian Henderson.
Hey, Ian.
Hey, Doc.
Kevin Barron, I just collided with somebody there.
So we have Ian, Mike Terenzio, Joe, Kevin, myself, and Dean, I think. Is that right?
That's what it seems.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so it's Matt Terenzio, as in Matthew.
Matt, right. Sorry.
Okay.
Okay, so I don't know if you guys have been listening in, but we've managed to set up an IRC session at Freenode with Pound VRM. So if we wish to pass URLs or whatever back and forth, this can be done.
And there's also a URL on the wiki that you can get to from the community portal. So it's the meeting notes for 2007-05-09. And I'll be updating that as we go, so feel free to correct errors and add your name to the attendees or correct spelling or what have you.
Good. Okay. So Dean, you had an agenda for the meeting?
I have a generally loose agenda, which I'll go over now. In which I end up handing it over to you in one moment.
Okay,
right, last week we had what I thought was an excellent and perhaps the best of the calls we've had so far. I want to continue with some of the points we raised last week. But before that, things to discuss are an update from Doc on Brussels, IIW discussion, June discussion, then user cases, VRM flowchart, the blog, the web cage, web page, not cage, sorry. And then I want to pick up on a point that was made in last week's call. So, Doc, and of course we're open to other agenda items as well. One other point I need to make is that I have another conference call that I need to prepare for no later than 10 till 3 New York time. So I'd like us to be completed at 2:45, which is just short of an hour from now.
Okay.
All right, so Doc, why don't you talk about Brussels and IIW?
Okay. Well, Brussels is in the past, and IIW is in next week. Brussels was the identity open space sessions, which followed a bunch of Liberty sessions. Liberty is one of the one of the larger, older identity management standard-setting and policy bodies, possibly along with the WS Federation, the most formal of those. And they hosted us very graciously, Brett McDowell, primarily. And the identity open space part of it was run to the degree these things are run by Kalia Hamlin, who's also very involved in the identity stuff. Her blog is Identity Woman. We had two sessions there I thought that were quite productive, just in terms of, you know, getting people to see each other and talk about some of what we're trying to do. The first was of a general VRM session, and the second was a session on because effects, which are kind of critical to open source, that you make how you make money because of something rather than with something, and that was led by J.P. Ramaswamy, who's the CIO of the services division of British Telecom, and who will be coming more involved with what we're doing at Berkman as BT becomes more involved with that as well. A high point for me was getting to see at least at the top level, because I couldn't read all the small print, but what Ian's been working on, he's got quite a detailed document, and maybe you'll want to visit that a little bit, Ian. The other was getting Ben Laurie more involved. Ben is one of the primary contributors to the Apache project over many years. He works at Google, and he'll be at Google. You know, he lives in the UK, but he's employed by Google, and he's invited me to come up and sit and visit some Google people the week after IIW, somewhere in there, just for a day. So that's going to be a bit of a drive, but that's going to be a good thing. Getting his interest in VRM is, I think, a good thing. I was hoping he'd be on this call, but I guess he's not. He did listen in on some of the call last week, but mostly lurked. What was your take on iOS, Ian?
Yeah, I thought it was very good that because effects one in particular was. Gave me a lot to think about. I'm still thinking about it.
Right.
Yeah, that the diagram that I was talking about and showing to you. We need to find a way of getting into the detail of that, but basically that's all the information that an individual needs, and all the information that an organisation needs on their customers, and trying to bring it all together on the one diagram to show the different flows of information between the two.
Right.
I think the carry on, Doc.
No, it's good. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
The main positive thing that came out of the session for me was the desire from the Liberty guys to engage with Project VRM and build. I mean, I don't understand the detail yet, but build a technical specification for VRM swapping of data around, I suspect. So I've agreed to sign up my little business to join the Liberty Alliance in order to pursue that specification building exercise. And I think that's, well, my hope is that it's more than just me that's joining that effectively.
That's good. I agree that Paul Madsen of the Liberty Alliance, who joined the call last week that I missed, and I guess briefed you guys or some of you folks on what he was talking about, had actually, I guess he and Brett, or maybe he alone, had contributed something to the wiki way back in January, and somehow I missed it. And when he examined it, he found that somehow it had dropped out. Joe and I have talked a bit about what's been going on with the wiki, and apparently there's either by accident or intent, some of the material in the wiki has been lost or was temporarily lost and had to be dredged out of the historical files and restored. So that's a whole other topic we need to visit. Joe thinks that we need to fix some things with the wiki to make it harder for people to screw it up. But in the meantime, Ian's right that what Paul presented is you know a working framework for one technological approach that's already standards based for doing VRM data exchanges and I need to get Berkman or myself to as well to join the Liberty Alliance, so we can participate as much as we need to in what they're doing there. They're probably the most downstream in among the identity systems in constructing ways for data to be securely and trustably exchanged in an enterprise framework. So that's a and they're very eager to help out, and they're very careful not to say this is the only way, but this is a way and it's a good way. So I think that there's a lot to work with. One of the things that I think we need to explore is how to match up technologies like Liberty, like what Ian's working on, with particular use cases and how those would play out in various use case scenarios. Because more technologies are going to be showing up. We're going to be I'm going to be talking, I guess, tomorrow morning. No, it's Friday morning, I think, with some of the Higgins folks. Higgins is a kind of framework for multiple identity systems that supposedly has been designed against some of the early, though we weren't calling them VRM yet, we were calling it CORM, Company Relationship Management, ideas that we had a couple of years ago, and has really apparently gone quite a ways. So, you know, I'd like to outline at least, or start outlining where some of these different technologies fit in, and I think we'd like to go over that next week at IIW, which some of you may be making, I don't know.
I'm definitely making it. I was curious, Doc, it seemed to me, depending on the schedule with the IIW folks, we might be able to open a conference call into one of those rooms. I think we did that for one of the venues in December.
Right. I think we possibly could. I don't
know if that makes sense, but I wanted to suggest it.
Do they have phones in those rooms? I don't remember.
They had it one, because I remember we used it.
Okay. At the Computer History Museum.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's a good thing, and we'll look into doing that. That would be a good idea.
So we might be able to have at least one session where we bring in some of the folks who are on this call, or other folks who would want to call in.
Yeah,
right. I think, and maybe we could work it so at least one of the VRM sessions that we have is as early as possible, so people in the UK and beyond can dial in at a reasonable hour.
Yeah, just one more thing on Brussels, Doc. Well, I remember the Adriana, who also was there.
Yes.
Her and I are meeting in London tomorrow just for another deeper dive into the VRM stuff.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Just a lot of good connections made.
There are a lot of great connections. I haven't put into it yet on my blog, but I just put up a bunch of pictures of various folks who were there. A mutual friend of Dean's and mine, Steve Lewis, who currently lives in Bulgaria, but also lives in, as he calls it, the People's Republic of Brooklyn from time to time, is also came and he has a lot of history in the telco business and other areas that may be useful, and he's taking an interest in it as well. But Adriana has been interested in this for some time. She works with Johnson & Johnson, among other companies, and I met with them last October in a meeting that she invited me down to, which is very interesting, and they're very interested in exploring VRM in various ways. I mentioned them before, and the connection that I have with them is through Adriana. So,
right.
And she lives in the UK, obviously, but is quite a fun and smart and interesting character.
All right, why don't we move on to June 4th, Doc?
Right, okay, so at the Berkman Center at Harvard in Cambridge, I've lined up June 4th as a date for having a VRM meeting. We've got the conference room at the Berkman Center. It's a really good location for calling in as well as attending. And Berkman will provide supplies as well. It's a really excellent place. In fact, it could be that I could explore this. Berkman has an affiliation with, I forget what it's called. I think it's the Internet Study Center or something like that. At Oxford, that has a really good teleconferencing setup where people at Oxford can be on a nice big screen in the conference room at Berkman. I know it's a pretty good drive from London, but It might be an interesting thing. The calling in might work as well. The idea was we'd talk about VRM in general in the morning, and the public radio project in the afternoon, hopefully with the same people that we had come the last time, from the various public broadcasting organizations in the U.S. I had an interesting talk on the way back in the train from Brussels with Ben Laurie about approaches to the public radio challenge. The most important aspect of it was that Ben, who is I don't know if he's notoriously skeptical, but he's a tough test on whether or not something's going to pass and something's going to fly, and he thought it was a really good idea. So that was very encouraging at the very least, and he's quite convinced that if we explore it, we can probably, for that particular use case, find a relatively small set of available technologies, maybe liberties among them. Maybe we could cherry pick some of what users want from the menu that Ian has collected as well for that particular use case. The interesting challenge there that I'd like to explore is pulling apart transaction and relationship, because both of them involve a financial aspect with public radio. You buy your membership, and at the same time, what people, that's the only thing you can buy right now, and what you buy basically is direct mail until the end of time. There's nothing much more to it than that, but it could be that much more could be there if we wanted it to be. And the other thing is being able to have a transaction where the money, even if it's just collected by the stations, does end up going to the producers of the programs, which is, if that's the intent of the listener. So I think what I'd like to do for that meeting is challenge the more technical among us to come up with ideas for how that could be done in both those cases, the relationship case and the transaction case. Go ahead,
this is Drummond. I just joined. I apologize for being 30 minutes late. I had a conflicting call for the first part, but it sounds like you just asked for a technical solution. My ears are pricking up.
The techies have stepped up. What we're talking about right now is a meeting we're having on the 4th of June at the Berkman Center. That's going to be VRM in general in the morning and public radio in the afternoon. And
okay.
What I was saying was that in the public radio use case, that the interesting challenge there is that we're looking for financial exchanges toward two different purposes. One is relationship, which is to say membership with the stations, and membership with other organizations potentially, and the other being transactions based on paying for particular programs and getting the financial and, I guess, sort of chain of custody relationship or the supply chain relationship lined up so that when Kalia, for example, wants to just pay her local public station for This American Life and wants to earmark this contribution for This American Life, it gets to them.
Got it.
So that's the, so there are two different challenges there. And I preface that by saying that Ben Laurie, who I spent some time with on the way back from the Brussels events, and who's pretty quick to be skeptical about a lot of things, said he thought that was actually a pretty good use case to work on, and he was pretty sure that if we did the looking, that we'd find the available technologies, and it might be just a matter of putting the pieces together, and then, the next step might be going to the public radio organizations and or the public broadcasting organizations and saying, here we have this, now what, right? So that would be.
And there also are some huge political slash operational slash logistic issues at play there, because the public radio or NPR or CRB, I mean, the governing body, the national body, has one set of issues and circumstances. The stations have their own sets of issues and circumstances, and then the producers have yet a third set of issues and circumstances. And when I was on the stations, please understand that not all the stations have the same issues and principles and concerns.
Right.
So that's not one unique thing. I'm sure they have many in common, but there's also variations. Same thing goes with the program producers. Some of the program producers are tied at the hip to the national side. Some of them are decidedly tied to their own hip at being independent. And
right.
So
it
is a thorny road we must walk to make this work.
Right. And even if it doesn't work, which is entirely possible, I'd like it to fail for political and not technical reasons. So what I'd like to do is, respecting the political problems, I'd still like to go forward with trying to find a technical solution and then have it shot down for political reasons, rather than, you know, start with the political and go then to the technical.
Doc, this is Nick Chivitovsky sort of chiming in here, also having arrived late on the call. Yeah, hi, everybody. Following on from that, we had to go through a process that may or may not be illustrative to achieve the goal you just described, which is in the TV Anytime standard-setting body, which was all about deriving metadata to describe content to enable different usage cases to take place within, you know, a horizontal PVR-equipped marketplace. We found we had to go through a kind of a scoping process for a requirements set, and that prioritized use cases relative to the perceived value of those use cases from all of the different value chain participants. So we did a kind of a structured vetting of the capabilities we wanted to, it was stated that we wanted to enable, and we used that structured vetting process as a means of flushing out political versus technical obstacles. Because what would happen, and so you would say, okay, well, now we want to be able to do the following five things. These have been declared high priority usage cases. And in that instance, people who are placing priorities on those use cases included people from, say, both controlled access service providers, you know, people like NDS who operate proprietary secure networks of various kinds, and the BBC. Who have a reason to make their content as widely available as possible and have a different sort of pricing structure. And so, anyway, I put that in front of you not just to cite it as a process that one could go through to differentiate the technical and the political reasons why things get said no to, but also as possibly something to be drawn upon in that the BBC was very active in negotiating conditions for access to content that would enable interoperable, rights-aware access to content that enabled, you know, all kinds of free types of access to be coexistent with compensated access of various types.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the purpose of that process, and I have this time as well as others seen the VRM use cases as potential things that could leverage that experience, as well as prospectively some of that technology as well. Liberty Alliance was involved in TV Anytime additionally. So, and the last capping note is BBC, when I mentioned it to some people who I worked with at TV Anytime, was very interested in the public media VRM activities that took place up at Berkman.
Oh, cool. Excellent. Well, so if did you catch that we're going to meet June 4th?
I did.
Berkman?
Yep.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, good. So that's probably going to be a half day thing. A half day for public media, a half day for VRM. And we'll do the VRM stuff in the morning early, so folks overseas are in a better position. Although I realize that being on the East Coast is a little less inconvenient than it is here on the West Coast. So we're at least 8 hours off, so we're a third of a day off back here. Definitely. That sounds good. There, Craig Burton, who I'm trying to convince to come to the IW next week, and has been a steady source of wisdom on many different topics over the years, once said that all technical problems are technical and political, and the technical sides can always be solved. So having a method for approaching the two together is probably a good thing. Maybe you could come equipped with that on June 4th if we run into that kind of stop energy.
Sure. I'd be happy to help to that extent, because it became an arm wrestling process in the standards world, where there was always a technical reason why a business interest couldn't compromise in the face of a shared use case.
Right.
Pushing those out of the way was part of the effort.
Right. So, in fact, Keith Hopper of Public Interactive had suggested at the last, I don't know if you're still around, because you left early at that meeting, said that he arrived at the conclusion that what we needed actually was a new public station that would be kind of, that would, in other words, would have no history. In other words, let's just take one of the new ones that's coming into existence, or make a new internet-only national station, if that would be possible. That's prototypical. It would exist entirely on the net in order to try out whatever it is we're going to do. And then it would be kind of a working test bed for whatever it is we're going to do, which I think is kind of a good idea, though that in itself may have political problems. The fact that he suggested it also suggests that the problems might be surmountable, because they're the primary supplier of technology to all the public television radio stations, rather. So they're kind of familiar with what's involved with that.
That's interesting.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So what's next on the Dean on the agenda?
All right. Well, use cases. I wanted to talk about if we had some use cases. And this would have been a better topic, agenda item, had we a lot more people on the call. I wanted to get some suggestions for use cases, because as the thinking expands, it's clear that we need to have more use cases in our focus, or in our, you know, on the screen, in order to make sure that we don't get too narrow or too lost on certain agenda. And so I was hoping that we could have some more discussion of use cases, and I was also hoping to get some more discussion of glossary, because that, you know, dictionary or glossary are terms that came up in the last call, and it really is in many ways critical toward other things, which I'll be getting to agenda-wise. It's critical that we have a common language, common terminology, and that as we discuss it and as we bring this forward, everyone's speaking about the same thing and is on, as they say, the same page. Because in some of what we discuss, even the semantics of what we discuss can sometimes change the perception of what we're talking about. So I was hoping we could get some more use cases and that people could suggest some of them where VRM is called for and makes sense. Now, I mean, I could go on and on about how Apple could sure use some VRM retooling, but I think I'd say that and start foaming at the mouth, so I won't.
I'm wondering.
I'm not sure if anyone else could use it.
Okay, here's a this is a use case that came up for me this morning, actually, about the time I was talking to you, Dean. You were at the Apple place, and I was at the Volkswagen place. And I just finished talking to my sister about a related thing, and I think it was she who came up with this, the generalized use case that she would like to see happen is having the customer retain the memory of prior interactions with a particular supplier, so that because notoriously the vendor doesn't have that. What I had with the Volkswagen dealer was the radio went bad in my Volkswagen Passat because Volkswagen isn't capable of making anything electronic that lasts, but that's another matter. And they replaced it. Then that one went bad, and they replaced it with another one. And that one can't see the CD changer in the back of the car. Each time that I've brought in, and they've gone to look at what, you know, what the deal was, where they start from, believe it or not, they actually have a space at the bottom of the page where they enter the thing, which is, I'm not kidding, customer complaint. That is the field that they fill in. Then they go back to look at whatever history might be there. And what she was saying is what she would like to be able to do is walk into a, you know, anybody she has a relationship with, where there is a relationship. You know, I bought a car from this dealer. I bought a computer from this store. And I have in my possession in some form something that has captured the history so that I can present the history with the code that will help them bring it up again. Now, I realize that this brings up all kinds of operational friction for them because they've got their CRM systems, right? But if VRM's going to work, it has to, you know, have some teeth and engage with the gears of the VRM system. So,
well, Doc, what you're talking about is actually the V side of RM, because the C side of RM is what we needed to know about them so we could market more to them and abuse them with our data mining. What you're discussing is the V side, which is what, funny because the V and the C are almost interchangeable here. It's what the users, customers, clients, normal people, etc. It's what they want to know to be able to deal, in fact, repeatedly with the vendors.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, in many ways, it's just mirror imaging it. And this again goes to what I was going to, you know, I'm jumping a little ahead of schedule here on the agenda, but this gets back to what I had suggested toward the end of last week's call, which is that what we keep alluding to and getting back to in these discussions is that we need a totally agnostic body, and this is so incredibly closely aligned with the people, and, you know, obviously there's people on this call who know exactly what I'm talking about. This is so close to what the identity people are doing. But it needs to be a neutral, agnostic clearinghouse, very much akin to ID, where both vendors and users can go without fear of mining, spamming, or phishery, and not in fact Google or Yahoo as the trusted source, but this trusted source where all this data can be, and where vendors will have as much control of their data as end users will have of their data. You know, what to give out
right.
to whom, what to put out publicly, what to put out on a generic basis. I really feel that this is, you know, we really do keep ending up with what seems to me to be a need in this area.
So, and this is the generalized, I think in some ways we do need to sort of visit the generalized stuff. Drummond, I'm sure you have some thoughts about this. Am I right?
Yes, I am. I am, Doc. Although, to be totally honest, I just got another call that took me about 3 minutes, and I came back about 15 seconds ago.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Quick, tell me what it is that I have the thoughts about.
I was overthought to have heard.
All right, I'll just start again. Drummond, I'm saying where I feel we keep going in these calls is the need for a neutral and agnostic clearinghouse, very much akin to the work going on in the ID world.
Yes.
Where both vendors and users have a place to go.
Yep.
Where they have control of their data, how much is open, how much is not open but or protected or specified as to who
yep.
gets what, and where generic or non-generic can be selected by whoever enters the data, and where there be no mining, spamming, or phishing.
You don't
want
to hear my thoughts about this because they take the rest of the call.
Well, I do believe that your thoughts about this are critical. And, you know, had you been on last week was our best call ever, and had you been on, it would have been our better than best call ever.
Well, and I apologize because I was at the Higgins face-to-face, and you know, trying to get up to speed on all of what Higgins is going to bring to this equation, which I think is a lot. And just like Liberty Alliance's architecture. So that's why I love the follow-up, the Paul Madsen's blog post, the discussion on the list. I'm eating it up. So, yeah, I mean, that the ability to have that neutral space and, you know, the where it's safe for the, you know, the end user to, you know, to have their data and manage their relationships without, you know, giving up control, especially of incoming communications. That's, I think it's just a huge value proposition, one that, you know, I'm personally actively working on commercially, and I think several other companies are.
That's great. So the what we're looking at here, Drummond, in case you missed it, is a generalized it's less a use case than a universal situation, which is that the customer has more memory of the prior engagements with the vendor than the vendor does at the service provider level. So when Dean walks into the Apple store and meets the third genius from the genius bar who still doesn't know who he is or what his problem is, but he knows both very well. Or when I go to the Volkswagen dealer and I have to tell them for the fourth time that the third radio that they installed still doesn't work and here's how. When they have the records, okay, I mean, there are records of the prior engagements in their possession. What are the means at the minimal level on the vendor side and on the customer side that need to be brought together so that the customer can help lead the engagement with the vendor for the benefit of both, without doing a complete rewrite of the CRM system on the one hand, or write a very complicated VRM system on the other? That to me is a question. What's the minimum set of data types, even, and not even looking at where they would live, that need to be presented to each other that something good will happen here?
Yeah.
And is that even the right question?
I think it's the right question. I mean, here's the way I often think about the problem, which is if you start from exactly the description you were giving of what the people involved. So the customer, you know, you, Doc, going to the Volkswagen dealer, you have this knowledge of the relationship and the previous incidents in the relationship that's really burned into your memory because it's burning you up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they, as this, you know, bigger institutional entity, they have records of it, but, you know, it's not any one person's responsibility to keep you happy. And so they have this sort of dim collective memory someplace in their CRM system of just the minimum they need to know to attend to you as a customer. So you've got this deep and intimate knowledge, and they've got this sort of shallow and loose knowledge. When I think about that, and I think about, you know, reflecting the ability to assist you, the end customer, in helping them help you better. I think of it as a technical means of being able to take your knowledge and on your side of the relationship and share it with them in a way that they don't have to do a lot of work, but they have access to that knowledge and a way to plug it into their system that adds a lot of value and makes it a lot easier for them to deal with your needs as a customer without them having to completely retool their systems.
I have an example of that working in a very basic scenario, which is just in a service relationship. You had to appear in person, Doc, for that experience to unfold. So you'd need to be able to represent what was happening to the parties with whom you were having an interaction and convey a history of that interaction that was coherent and accessible from by anyone who you wanted to be able to talk to you about your problem. You wanted to inform them in advance. And just very brief kind of case study was, I got sent the wrong part by the refrigerator company. You know, so I had to make all those different calls. But while I was making those calls and wading through the service relationship process, I also documented those calls on a website. And so up on my little blog about, you know, what I wanted, what I got, .com, I was able to email the person who first dealt with me a copy of everything that he had said and everything that I had said and all the parts and all the information. I wasn't doing anything else because I was on hold. And then that made it much less convenient for him to deny knowledge or deny responsibility. And I said, well, I'd be happy to talk to the next person you want to send me to, but have them look at this first. And effectively automating that process of informing, of documentation, of sort of dynamic documentation of interaction in a way that empowers users and calls accountability from service providers is what the system would need to enable.
So another direction in which a similar architecture is working today, because I really like that example, yet it's orthogonal to what I've run into, I think Nordstrom's, and maybe the Gap does it too, but when you buy a product, they put a UPC on the product that they scan for returns. So if you think about really what we're talking about is in Doc's example where you're physically there is trying to get some sort of digital receipt that can link back into their system when you want to go back to them and talk to them about it. So if they simply provided you something, you know, with the equivalent of this digital UPC so that when you come back in, you can say, look, I bought this last Tuesday and here's the digital access code for you, that would at least give them a hook back into their system.
Yeah, the problem with that, the problem with that is that I've been dealing with, you know, another use case here just from personal experience for Verizon, or well, actually it's SEC /ATT. There are three different groups there, at least, that are, they say, claim are mandated by the FCC, and each one of them has a different trouble ticket. And even when I give them the trouble ticket, they usually don't recognize it. So I think we should steer clear of trying to fix vendors' systems and have something that's more akin to, you know, what somebody just mentioned about, you know, blogging it where it's available. And, you know, basically if they can't remember it, at least you can and have the ability to refer to this, and you can point them to it. I think that's
was the source of that example, and I really think that that's the only thing that works. I mean, the whole tone of the conversation with the service provider who had been designated by the vendor, as a matter of fact, as their service source within a local market, his whole reaction to his responsibility was completely different when he realized that it had all been recorded, you know, that I'd made a document and I kind of, and so if we can enable that in some fashion whereby instead of submitting your commentary to the respective vendor, you're recording it at your registry, you know, however you characterize that, then that is a record of your transaction. I would imagine that in disputes, that would be a significant source of documentary, you know, or relevant documentation. Where
can you put that URL up on the, wiki?
I've got that. Yeah, I've got that someplace. Yeah, it's
We have an IRC going. For those of you who may not know, it's at freenode.net and it's /VRM. Just so you know. So we turned out that was pretty easy to do.
I definitely agree that users need to be able to drive that transaction especially in a centralized way. I mean, that, you know, putting it on your blog or on your own website is pretty powerful. What that's missing is a hook back into the vendor. And that was really sort of the architecture where I was, you know, Gap or Nordstrom's creates this hook and gives it to the user and says, when you return this, here's the hook back into our system.
Well, and there's no reason that I can see why they shouldn't be able to, why I couldn't be able to enter or would have entered a case number, for example,
right.
in that history. And then when they called it up, then they'd be looking for that case number.
Right, absolutely right. I mean, it'd be nice, right, if you say, hey, go look at my website, and by the way, there's the thing that you click on that pulls it up in your system.
Okay,
right.
So something I want to say here in respect to what Kevin said, and maybe some of the others said as well, that, you know, that is the correct and fully cynical view of vendors and vendor CRM systems that are internally extraordinarily fucked up. And phone companies especially are really bad at this, and they're certainly not alone. I would like VRM to provide some of the hooks, and back to the vendor that Joe just talked about, that would at least give them, you know, some of the input that they need to start fixing their VRM systems. I mean, I don't want to give, I mean, their CRM systems, I don't want to give up utterly on those things in the long term. In the short term, sure. I mean, we can't, that's an ocean that's going to be hard to boil. But I think it's more like the Mediterranean and not the Atlantic. I think it's I think if we start with an Adriatic somewhere, or a harbor someplace, it might work. In David Weinberger's new book, Everything is Miscellaneous, he starts out by talking about the case of Staples as a retailer. One of the things I didn't even know about Staples as a retailer is that they actually go out of their way to make their store, to design their stores not as mazes that drag the customer past as many possible impulse purchases as possible, by putting the most needed items in the back of the store, and a zillion distractions on the way out, but rather design their stores so that all the signage is visible, nothing is distracting the customer, it makes it as easy as possible for the customer to do this all the time. They actually have like a full-time staff at this dummy store in Framingham, Massachusetts, and all the time they're constantly looking for ways to make it more convenient for the customer. So I think there are some companies out there that are not hopelessly obtuse and habit bound in their dead CRM systems, and might be willing to deal with us on this.
Right. Well, I also, I think one of the nice things, although the sort of UPC or the automated hook back in triggers, well, what about when vendors don't want to support that? My guess is actually that when presented with evidence, they would like to know immediately what their internal evidence is in that same case. So I think they'd want to support it right away.
I think so too. And I think if I'm in charge of the CRM system inside some company where I'm trying to do the right thing and I need a little bit more political support, and some guys from Harvard come along with something called VRM and looking for to help them out, shit, you know, there's got to be a company out there that'll want to do that, you know, that'll want to say yes to that.
I think we should qualify that with the 5 to 10% of companies where the marketing person is not automatically paranoid of anything that doesn't come from within.
Right. And there are going to be some. I mean, I think that there, you know, there is a, you know, there are a lot of companies out there, and not all of them have to be evil or stupid or bad. You know,
yeah, they're most likely to be the ones that are up and coming, not the current dominant players.
I mean, is this any different than,
good point.
I mean, there was a day not too long ago in which there weren't any companies on the web, right? Somebody had to
yes.
go first. Somebody had to say, hey, I think it'd actually be useful for us to publish information publicly on the Internet, you know? And then somebody had to be the first to accept, order forms. And, is this really any different? Is this like, well, geez, we have customers here who actually want to tell us what they want. They want to share information with us to make it easier for them.
Well, one of the things that's maybe different about it is that it's the conversation that we want to have as users isn't 100 conversations with 100 vendors. We want to be able to state a set of conditions and preferences and profiles, and then we want to dynamically release subsets of those profiles as applicable to a given context. And so rather than, you know, managing individual relationships with multiple CRM systems, we want to announce certain things about ourselves and see then who wants to play by those rules, and then have a process of mediation be available to equip us to, you know, conduct interactions according to the rules that are established.
Right.
You know, not one to one across the ball, but you know, one to many as much as possible within category areas. So I think what's different about it is that it's yes, the companies want to know. They'd love to have a conversation with you. The question I have is, you know, how sincere are they about having that conversation, and how many conversations can I afford to have at
right.
any given time?
Well, that's where, from my perspective, you know, just as the web required technology, you know, or else it wasn't going to be possible, right? How do you publish this information to anyone who wants to show up at your doorstep? Here we're talking about VRM is you know, at least from an internet perspective, is going to be enabled by, you know, protocols and software that enable those conversations to be, you know, automated. You know,
absolutely,
absolutely. Yeah. And that's
yeah, and it's like I think it's rather than thinking about those protocols, and you see little glimmerings of these kinds of things popping up not only in the identity space but also in the social media space, where you know portable profiles of various types are you know varyingly standardized to enable people to say migrate traits about themselves across social networking or social media services, and I think hooking onto something like that with identity. In addition to sort of profile characteristics, but some of these you know, elements of ideas like the identity rights agreements, like how much am I willing to tell you about me, might have something to do with how much you're willing to reveal about your policies to me prior to the release of that information. You know, hooking onto something where people are already actively managing profile data because they're motivated to do so in electronic environments for existing reasons of efficiency and self, you know, disclosure could be the way could be the right thing to attach, you know, VRM related agreements to.
Now, it seems to me I'm going to run in an orthogonal direction to last speaker. And I'm sorry, who was that? Because that was great stuff.
It's Nick. Nick Civitoski.
Nick Civitoski.
Okay, great. Thanks, Nick.
Sure.
The particular case of the profiles and adoption, I agree with everything you just said. The architecture of the user interaction of getting sort of, so we have a service interaction or we make a purchase and we want that to, you know, automatically or semi-automatically log into some sort of user-centric history. I think there are some interesting problems there, but potentially it's about replacing paper receipts with digital receipts and making
yeah.
it easier for us to get those for, say, customer service interactions as opposed to just purchasing transactions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, very much about that.
So if I could get my Staples receipt, and when I go to Staples, either associated with my Staples loyalty card or a way that I could tell them at the point of purchase, by the way, I want you to send my digital receipt to this identity. I think that's I like that idea. I'm not sure how we get Staples to adopt it, but again, I think the comments that Drummond made about the adoption curve apply.
Well, what's very interesting is that if you're part of the Staples reward or you know affinity group, all of your data is available to you on the web. I have a Staples near me that I go to. But if I have to schlep anything that's difficult to carry, I order it online, and they have all my information online. And they've automated stuff very elegantly. They've done a very good job of making – a lot of these automated places do not have ease of use for the end user. And they've automated to the point where – and by the way, if anyone is interested, you should know about this. They have hard drives, internal and external, on incredible sales this week. A 400-gig drive for $88, that's pretty good. That's after rebate and all that, but it's
really
still
good.
A hell of a deal. Anyway, and if that's
we have a sponsor. Go ahead.
And some internal drives. Also, it's a very good deal.
I'm brought to you by Staples and Maxtor.
Anyway, so I went online and ordered those, and one of the things I was concerned about, because what often happens is if you buy something and there's a rebate, but you've bought two of them, it could sometimes, you know, you can just give up on getting the second rebate. And I my thinking as I did this was that the price was good enough, to hell with it. And damn if the website didn't tell me, yes, we know you bought two and we'll process two for you. So, yeah, Staples is forward-thinking in a lot of ways. And I you know, said I had my one anti CRM VRM incident with them last summer, I bought a very heavy new color printer, HP printer, which proceeded to break in about 3 weeks. And HP service said, "Oh yes, we'll give you a refurb, no problem." And I thought, wait a second, I just spent, you know, $400 or $500, and 3 weeks later they're giving me a refurb. And I called Staples and they said, "Oh, Mr. Lansing, we're so sorry, but we don't do returns on printers after 2 weeks." So I got very angry, and in the middle of the night, which any of you who know me know that that's like normal hours for me, called Staples headquarters and spoke to the night watchman and told him he damn sure better give me the president's extension. And I spoke to the president of the stores, actually I spoke to his voicemail, and left him a message explaining the whole thing, saying, "You have all these ads saying easy, and you make it easy." I said, "How can it be easy that I buy something and I'm told 3 weeks later when it's broken, my best bet is a refurb?" I also bought Staples protection deal, frankly, because I loved the local store, and I thought they would just fix things for me. Well, they got on it big time, to the point where they sent somebody over here to pick up the old one, give me a new one. And they were so guilty about it, they gave me twice as much as I paid for the printer in ink for, like, the rest of my life. But the point is, they are going out of their way to, in fact, do right by the customer. Their data mining does not seem to be purely to sick 'em with garbage, and they do, I mean, they do send me a ton of email, but the email always includes a money off coupon if I spend something like $50 or $100, which is, you know, an easy expenditure at Staples. So they're sort of onto it. If anything, we might consider inviting them in simply because they're of a mind to be like this.
Part of what their motivation, though, is it not, is to keep you as a customer, right? So part of the problem with, I think, working, and we've mentioned this in other VRM sessions, part of the problem with enticing individual companies in is that they are suddenly presented with the prospect of maybe having to play on a much more level playing field. And so that's a challenge, conceivably, you know, where you can have a uniform comparison of respective prices and service agreements and so forth through whatever this envisioned mediation functionality might be.
That's absolutely right. Although I think with this digital receipts particular use case, companies that support it, I think actually can provide some very interesting information back to accounts payable departments at companies. So I think that's actually a differentiation. For example, if Staples can automatically report to a corporate accounting system exactly what happens in this open standard for digital receipts.
Yeah, I think the benefits outweigh the liabilities in this because they are, in fact, you know, it gives them both leadership and, you know, not everybody's going to adopt it. Yes, it does level out the playing field, but those who are working on the level playing field have the sort of what we'll call early adopter opportunity.
Well, exactly. No question about that. And it may be that thinking of a category leader in each of the several categories that you say depend upon in a business trip, you know, would be a way of surrounding a prospective VRM user with sort of an integrated experience of a kind that would be tuned to what they're trying to do, right, in a way that made the overall, the sum experience, more valuable as a result of having this mediation function and this documentation function. I mean, even if it just made the process of counting up our expenses at the end of a trip a lot easier, that would be great.
Yeah, no, I would love to have a corporate expense card that really wasn't about the credit billing, but coordinates the receipts all back to center.
Exactly, bidirectional. And so, right.
Dee, what are we looking like time-wise here?
Time-wise, we have really just a few more minutes. Let me just bring up two other issues and then a final issue for thought. One is the blog, which Doc is going to be getting to work on, and the other thing is there's a webpage group, and I believe we're going to reconvene the webpage discussion group this coming Wednesday and then have the regular call the following Wednesday. They're calling this the regular call. And now I'd like to bring up food for thought, and then we do need to close the call out. A fellow from Seattle sent me a request for a VRM flowchart. And I find that a very interesting idea, and I accept it as a hell of a challenge, and having absolutely no graphic ability, I, of course, defer to others. But what I think we have there as a challenge to us takes graphics plus the dictionary plus Ian's really excellent and detailed list boiled down into a flowchart of how one goes about the VRM experience. And I think if someone or members of our group could attack this just as a conceptual project, I think that would be very helpful for us, because sometimes visual representation of these things is very, very helpful. And I don't know who among us has those talents or has the time to devote to that.
Okay, I can't help you with it.
But if anyone here does, show of hands, please.
Okay, so I was a little interrupted there by my kid, but I should point out that we have several of these already. Okay, I'm not saying any of them are definitive or final or even close to it, but there was one that came up at the IIW that Johannes Ernst drew. There's the one that Paul Mattson drew at both on the wiki and at the and in Brussels last week, or the week before last, both of those might be helpful. I also think there's more than one. I think that there are. I see it less as a matter of flow than as a matter of what are all the different kinds of ways of relating. So anyway, but it is a challenge.
And I also would like to point out that, provided we can round up enough people for the call 2 weeks from today, and I'd like to hopefully get everybody that's on the call now there. And Ian, I'm specifically calling for your participation. I'd like to get Alan Mitchell. Alan Mitchell sent me and Doc, and I think Ian, you received this also. And if you didn't, I'll just forward it to you. He sent what you might call a framework for a wiki.
Right.
And it would be obviously participatory, which goes toward this idea of perhaps a template or a flowchart or something of that sort. And it's very well thought out. And one of the things I like about it is it's an extremely neutral document, which is essential to our moving forward. And so I'm hoping we can engage in discussion of that on the next call. May try and do. I say may because time is a premium commodity, but I may try and do one or two brief calls with participants, smaller conferences to prep for this.
So Dean, I want to connect those calls back to what's happening at IAW next week, because I think we made a commitment to try and set up a call-in time for an early session at IAW next Wednesday, and I'm going to be at IAW, so I certainly won't be able to make the web meeting, and that would be a meeting that I would like to be a part of.
Okay.
You want to say it again, Joe? I was busy being distracted again. I'm sorry.
I was just pointing out that in terms of potential calls going next week for the website, I think we're also going to have a call-in for the IAW, one of the IAW sessions, and then generally would not be available for a web meeting next week, and I would like to be at the next web meeting.
I'm gonna be at IAW too. I'm also hoping we can do a little coordination, because as usual at IAW, there's all kinds of stuff that gets scheduled at overlapping times. We've got four planned sessions on XRI and XDI related stuff. I think they're all going to be on Wednesday. But this time I don't want to miss the VRM session. Last time I got pulled into something else and I couldn't even go to the VRM session.
Right. All right. Well, let's just make it – when does it start, Monday morning or Tuesday?
It starts Monday afternoon.
At 1.
Yeah, 1. And typically that first day – Kalia just told me earlier this morning they got some new plan for the first day. So the first day is
okay,
always...
I need to check with Kalia. Let's see – Yeah, I'm going to check with Kalia and Phil, because there's been a lot of discussion about changing how we do things and all that. I've not kept up with it, and I need to because I'm allegedly an organizer. But what I want to do is get. I don't feel a need to evangelize VRM there. I kind of like the approach we have so far, where it has a profile that's just high enough to attract the right people. You know, so that's you know, rather than so high that everybody who has a beef with a vendor shows up or something. But what I'd like to do is make sure that, again, it's a long-winded answer to your concern. We need to not have that collide this time. So I guess what I'd like to do is do some air traffic control with Kalia in advance of that. I'll be driving up on Monday early, so that should work. We all still here?
Yeah,
all right.
So I guess, Dean, the question is, do we want to try and just move that web meeting back 2 weeks?
And have this call continue next week and put the web call for the week after. All right.
Okay.
Does that work?
And I'm gonna, by the way, a couple quick things. I have requested from the technical powers that be at Berkman a strategy for having a website at projectvrm.org and the wiki at you know, find some way that when people go to projectvrm.org, they go to the website, and then we'll continue having the wiki where it is, but you'll have to type in, I think that's the way it's going to work, it where you type in the whole cyber.law, the rest of it. So we need a strategy for that, but we need the website. Another thing is that they are working on fixing the wiki problem, so I just want to let you guys know that that's also going on. This is having trollers or unwelcome people screw with the wiki, which apparently is the problem. So.
All right, now I'm going to need to jump off, and gentlemen, when I jump off, that means we're all off the phone. So,
okay.
As moderator, I, you know, oh, the power. Anyway,
okay.
That's the scoop, and I will get this. I've been sending out to people. I'm posting these on my server, and I admit to being remiss on putting it on the wiki. Joe, if I can impose upon you, I may just send you those URLs, and if you would be so kind as to post them, it would save me time, effort, and frustration.
Absolutely. If you email me, I'll plug them into the community page.
Okay, and I'll work with Britt to make sure we get the transcripts up as well.
Okay, very good.
All right, everyone, I must go. I have a conference call in 8 minutes I have to get ready for, and I will speak with everyone next week. And if you can, Doc or Joe, get me a specific time for next week's call. Will it be the same time, 10 o'clock, 10:30 West Coast, or other, so I can make sure to let everyone else on the list know?
I think it'll depend on how things end up getting scheduled with IIW.
Yeah.
Which means Doc may be able to get an answer from Kalia, but we may not know until Tuesday morning.
Yeah,
Kalia,
you know, they strongly discourage scheduling things in advance of that. I mean, we can pick a sort of proposed time, but if we really can't commit to it until Tuesday morning.
Yeah.
It would be good, Doc, if you could find out the session schedules, because I think aligning with that schedule, you know, not necessarily picking one of the sessions, but knowing that, okay, there's a 9:45 and there's a 10:45 and, you know, what have you. That might be a good heads up for folks.
Right, right. Okay. So Dean, just send me a reminder of the time and I'll get it to Kalia and Phil and tell them we want to have a session during that time. And then
okay, off I go then, gentlemen. Everybody, thank you very much, and we will reconvene. Okay. Same place, probably same time.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
Very good.
Buddy, thank you. Bye now.
Cheers, folks.